You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
This week we're in Ourgate.
Where are we, Rose?
We are in Harrogate. How do you say that?
Oh yes, you've already stumbled upon this. Well, you've just arrived, of course. You've planned it perfectly. Harrogate's bathed in sunshine. We're in the Zwift draft house, where there's quite a crowd gathering. The women's road race, well, it's still in the neutral zone. They've started in Bradford, which is also bathed in sunshine. But the idea today, Rose, well, what's our plan for today?
Our plan is to follow the race from here. And because we get to go and see the three laps, we're going to go and check out some fan zones, some places where people are gathering, and we're going to go out, see them doing the local laps, three local laps at the end, which is where I think the whole race is going to be decided, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the highlight for me today so far has been we were wandering around the circuit, down the hill that climbs up to the finish, which is a very tough finish, and the French team were out training, and... They rode past, and the French men's team, that is. They were, you know, wrecking the course. And Julien Alaphilippe suddenly spotted Rose in the crowd. And ciao, Rose, ça va?
I'm hoping he does well on Sunday, I have to say, secretly. But I suppose I'm not allowed to be too biased like that, but I hope he does well. Especially after that. I mean, that's boosted my, you know, cool cred enormously from that moment.
Absolutely. I mean... I wish I'd photographed that, but you know Julien Alaphilippe quite well from the Tour de France, don't you? You spent a lot of time documenting his time in the yellow jersey.
Yeah, so I work for De Koenig and Quickstep, making their videos through the season, so obviously he's the main star attraction, so I have to interview him like every month, so he can pick me out from a crowd quite easily.
It was very impressive. Well, we're here to watch and talk about the women's race. It's still neutralised. Do a big old loop, which is also pretty tough. I bumped into Kasia Niviadoma, I can name drop too, a couple of mornings ago on her morning stroll to get a coffee. And she'd gone and ridden the loop that they're riding to get to the circuit here. And she said it's very, very tough as well. Obviously, early in the race, so may not be decisive, but it will help that wearing down process. Somebody else I met yesterday in Betty's Tea Room, which I'm hoping we'll have a chance to visit today, Rose, was Lizzie Banks, the rider riding for Great Britain. None had their team meeting yet, so they weren't quite sure of their plan, but you would imagine they're all for Lizzie Diagnan here. So here's Lizzie Banks at Betty's Tea Room yesterday. Well, Lizzie, you obviously do your pre-race prep here in Betty's.
Yeah, I mean, what's better preparation for the World Championships in Yorkshire than a cup of Earl Grey and a scone from Betty's?
You are kind of local, aren't you? I mean, you live in Sheffield, and you're saying your in-laws are based here.
It's my husband's aunt and uncle who are here, so... Yeah, so we've spent some time in Harrogate before, did the Tour de Yorkshire here 2 years ago. I feel like I know the world roads pretty well. Maybe not quite as well as Lizzie Diagnan, but I can tell you where pretty much every pothole is on, you know... most of the course.
And what do you think about the course? How much have you been able to ride it this week?
I've ridden the whole thing previously. This week we didn't really need to ride much of it because we knew it so well already. We did one ride that went out towards Ripon, and then we did the last kind of 15 miles, and we did a nice recce on the closed circuit loop on Wednesday. It's a great course. It's a really dynamic course. It's tough, but it's not... a kind of pure climbers course or a pure classic riders course. So I think that it really opens up the race because it's not possible to tell at this point who's going to win the race. You know, it really, you could ride 20 riders' names down and any one of those could win. It really depends on how it's raced, the conditions, so many factors.
And is it all for Lizzie Diagnan and the British team, or what's without giving away any secrets? This will go out after the race, obviously. What's the plan?
Well, we've got our team talk in a couple of hours, so I'll let you know soon, and I guess you'll find out on the road tomorrow. But for sure, Lizzie's a class rider. You know, she's a proven rider time and time again. she's made no secret of the fact that this is a race that she is really going for. We've got some big opposition, but of course we're going to do everything we can to try and get that rainbow jersey on her shoulders.
And how's your form? You've got you're sporting a plaster on your arm. You had a little tumble in Italy last week, didn't you? But how are you going?
Yeah, I had a little fall in Italy, but it's just a little bit of road rash, nothing else, thankfully. I was pretty lucky. I think I'm going well. I had a nice break in August, kind of a little bit of a mental and physical break. Time to get some training in rather than just racing, and then had a nice block of racing with Plouay and Bowles Ladies Tour, and then this little bit in Italy. So I'm feeling really good. I have a huge motivation, like such excitement for this race. You know, even just riding around on the recon, the support on the roads, the campers, people screaming your name, it's just amazing. So I can't stop smiling when I'm riding around. So I need to channel some of my excited energy into kind of leg energy on the bike. But yeah, I'm feeling good, and I think we've got a really well-bonded team here. We all get on really well, and that's really important. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can do tomorrow.
Well, that was Lizzie Banks there in the rarefied atmosphere of Betty's Tea Room, with Annemiek van Vleuten at the next table, not eating any clotted cream with her scone, or indeed even eating a scone. But Rose, that was kind of sort of bad timing there, because, well, Lizzie Banks, as we were listening to her, first of all was leading Lizzie Dagnan through her hometown of Otley. That's Lizzie Dagnan's hometown of Otley, off the front of the bunch. That was nice to see. But then she had a problem with her chain, I think.
Yeah, so you could see her on the side of the road just lose a bit of ground on everyone else as they were coming in towards the first climb of the day, which is Norwood Edge. And now, right now, we're very much on Norwood Edge, and it seems that the peloton is already kind of splitting apart. We're not losing any favourites, of course, at this point, but yeah, definitely some riders struggling to keep up at the back.
It's a tough climb, isn't it? It's pretty grippy. There are a few people dropped. It's worth commenting on the crowds as well. They look absolutely fantastic. Huge cycling community around that part of the world. I think half the population of Otley are in the local cycling club. Yeah, they've really come out in force on the climb there. Hannah Barnes, very prominent towards the front. Leah Lippert, who we saw at the Women's Tour. She was our race leader at the Women's Tour, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was showed. And I would say that the course that we're doing today is very similar to the course that she was doing very well on. Remember, there were some great battles with Kasia Niewiadoma at the Women's Tour this year. So she'll be definitely one to watch. And a very strong German team, actually. Lisa Brennauer and Lisa Klein, both also in the German team. But we can see Netherlands at the front, driving the pace and frittering some of the less-known riders off the back.
Well, we're only 15 kilometres into the race, 134 to go, but there's a group of about 25 actually clipped off the front already. And there is quite a lot of damage being done on this climb. I'm sure it's going to come back together, but it's interesting to see so early in the race so many splits.
Yeah, and no, kind of normally you have a doomed breakaway go, and I think a lot of people were predicting there would be a breakaway that went away for these first couple of climbs, and then, you know, the real racing would happen right at the end. But it seems like that's Demi Vollering there at the front trying to drive the pace already. So, yeah, we'll see if anything decisive comes of it.
Well, Rose, we've moved on to the Rafa pop-up round the corner, just off the finishing straight. It's a more serious bike racing watching place, this, isn't it? People are very focused. There's a couple of rooms here where people can watch the race. And, well, the race has moved on a bit since we last tuned in.
Yeah, massively. I mean, we're the second climb of the day, Lofthouse, we spent all morning saying, oh, probably nothing decisive will happen until the final few local laps. But Annemiek van Vleuten, on typical Annemiek van Vleuten form, went storming off up this climb and has built up a lead of 1 minute, if not a bit...
coming down a bit.
Yeah, almost 50 seconds now. But it's a very small group that is chasing her as well, with Soraya Paladin of Italy, Amanda Spratt is in there, Lizzie Deignan. There was a few whoops that we heard around the Rafa clubhouse when she went, tried to catch up with Annemiek, but, you know, didn't manage to make any grounds. And then the, you know, Mariana Vos is in that second chase group now, so further back. And Anna van der Breggen is also in that first chase group, obviously not doing any chasing because her teammate's up the road. So it's basically turned what we all kind of expected of this race on its head, hasn't it?
I mean, worth just emphasising the point that Annemiek van Vleuten attacked with 102 kilometres to go. And we were out last night with Matt White, the sports director at Michelin Scott, not really all that involved in the women's team there, but Annemiek van Vleuten obviously rides for that team. And he was talking about the training that she does, you know, and she trains a lot with the men on the team, and he says it's extraordinary, the training she does and the volume she does. If she's struck out like that with 100 kilometres to go, it's because she knows that she can ride pretty hard for 100 kilometres. And this has been you made the point earlier about there not being a kind of breakaway allowed to go clear. The racing has been very aggressive. It's been from the front, you know, and I've been quite surprised about that. There's been no kind of settling in at all. It's been aggressive from the start. We've seen Great Britain very prominent in the front, Germany and Holland. And the riders left in that chasing group, they're all leaders. Not many of them have teammates there. I think Italy have a couple of riders, and America have Chloe Dygert-Owen there. I think Taylor Wiles was there as well. I'm not sure she's still there. But, you know, they're all the heads of the teams. So they're the ones, the one person who's benefiting from this situation is Anna van der Breggen. But it seemed ridiculous. I said when Annemiek van Vleuten went 100 kilometres to go, I said, that's the race over then. But I was only half joking.
I know, it's funny because actually earlier on I thought it was strange about how much work everyone, Great Britain seemed to be doing, Australia seemed to be doing, USA seemed to be doing. And these are teams that are 6 or 7 rider teams. And the Dutch team is not only very strong, but it's also the biggest team with 8 riders. And so I was surprised about how much work they were all doing, and basically, you know, their leaders having to contribute quite early on to that effort. And I thought, well, maybe it's because they're trying to block a break from going away at that point. But I mean, there's no way that they can stop Annemiek van Vleuten getting away, you know, at all.
And I think Lizzie Deignan is very alert to the danger of this situation because she's doing an awful lot of chasing. And I mean, still so long to go. By the time they get to the finishing circuit, they're going to be crawling around here, surely, or maybe not.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who can actually stay in that kind of front group, because, you know, before all of this we were, you know, pegging Marta Bastianelli to do very well here, and, you know, the way the race is being raced at the moment, she won't have the legs to sprint at the end.
Rose, we've walked up the finishing straight. I must say, the weather helps, but there's a great atmosphere, isn't there?
Yeah.
And loads of people.
Yeah, it's brilliant. There's loads of crowds lining the whole... I mean, not great for someone who's 5'4" like me to be able to actually see the race as it passes, but, yeah, huge amount of crowds, huge amount of flags, plenty of booze, which is what, you know, what we like to see. And Annemiek van Vleuten just came through like a bullet, didn't she? Now we're expecting Chloe Dygert, which is the biggest change to last time through, that Chloe has set off, attacked from the other small group, and has got into time trial mode, hasn't she?
Yep, we're just waiting for her. She's shaved off at least 30 seconds already from Van Vleuten's lead. The surprising thing is she got rid of Van der Breggen, which is crucial. It's now, you know, one woman against the other, but Van Vleuten's got a big head start. But a lot of damage done on that lap. Lizzie Deignan went off the back. Van der Breggen tried to mark everything, but Dygert eventually just proved too strong. But has she left it too late?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, here she comes.
There she is.
It's incredible, isn't it? Because Lizzie Deignan actually looked quite, would seem to be, well, I guess it's a symptomatic of the fact that she was doing so much work to try and chase back. She seemed to always be active at the front, and it makes you think that she's paid for it now that we've got into these local laps, which are, you know, less hard than those big climbs earlier on, but more attritional.
And here come the chasers, led by Anna van der Breggen. And I'm really surprised. to she's had an easy ride all day, you know, and she's been sitting in that group, her only job being to mark anything that goes. And I'm not criticising Van der Breggen here. I think it just tells you how strong Dygert is.
Yeah, it's incredible, because we would have said almost certainly it would have been a Dutch 1-2 before they got into these local laps, and it doesn't seem to be turning out that way.
Shall we go and try and find this fan zone?
Yes, let's go and try.
And that was Lizzie Dagenham going through just off the back. Big cheers for her. But too late for her now to get back to that group, I think.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Well, Rose, we've taken ourselves out of the Rafa Cafe. I should say thanks very much to Rafa for being our title sponsor. Of course, it was nice to be there and to have some pizza. How was your pizza?
It was delicious, actually. And you got through about 1.5 pizzas, was it, Richard, there?
I wouldn't say 1.5, Rose. I had a little bit extra.
One and two quarters, then, shall we say.
No, listen, the impossible is beginning to seem possible. It was actually 100, almost 105 kilometres out that Annemiek van Vleuten went. Her lead hovered around 50 seconds to a minute for a long, long, long time. And then it started to go out 1.5 minutes. And now, as she approaches Harrogate for the first of three finishing circuits, it's over 2 minutes, 2:05. And the group behind has been breaking up a bit. Lizzie Dagenham's been having a few digs, and we saw Chloe Dygert have a go as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Italy actually are the only national team with two riders in that break. So if anyone's going to have to do all of the work, it's them. But we just hear the helicopter going over now, and the crowd shouting because Annemiek van Vleuten will just be coming in now. I hear the police cars coming through. But yeah, it's interesting that it's being left up to Lizzie Dagenham and Chloe Dygert to do some of the pulling. And we know that Chloe Dygert has got the power as the time trial champion to pull that whole break along. But, I mean, it's just, it doesn't seem to be organised enough to catch back to Annemiek van Vleuten.
I got the feeling that van Vleuten is riding very much within herself. I mean, she will know, she'll go out and ride 100 kilometres hard, and she'll know what she's capable of, even if here they don't have race radios, so they don't maybe have too much information about time gaps and so on. But I think behind we can see that maybe a couple of riders were either soft tapping or not able to commit more. Clara Koppenberg and actually Cecilia Utrip-Ludwig have both appeared to be, Paladin as well a little bit, appeared to be struggling a bit, and that's obviously encouraged Dygert and Dagenham to have a go. But you know, lurking there is Anna van der Breggen, and she's obviously a big danger, the defending champion.
Just see, well, actually the crowd,
a blur, an orange blur.
Couldn't even see the orange, such a big crowd, and everyone cheering and clapping. Can hardly even see Annemiek go past there. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Chloe Dygert will enjoy this kind of racing, certainly. I know she's known for not wanting to, she doesn't like wrestling with the rest of the pack. She doesn't like having to be in a big peloton. So she'll enjoy this kind of racing, but it's just about, you know, trying to get it organised. And at what point do they start thinking that they want to try to go for second, third, especially knowing that Anna van der Breggen is in their group and has been saving her legs this whole time.
Rose, we've made it to the fan zone at last. It's been a mission to get here.
It's been probably a greater challenge than actually racing the road race itself, wouldn't you say?
Well, I don't know who's had the tougher challenge today. Those chasing Annemiek van Vleuten or us trying to get ourselves into the fan zone, and that's just because there are so many people here, and we had to go a lot up the finishing straight, past the finish, over a bridge, into a very damp grass area, because the other day this was completely waterlogged and had to be closed, and it's still pretty damp, but it's really big. It covers a big area. There are big screens up, there's a Ferris wheel, there are loads of stalls and stands, and it's very nice as long as the weather holds.
Yeah, it's very, the sunshine is just glorious, actually. I mean, we've actually succeeded a little more today than people chasing Annemiek van Vleuten, because it looks like she's actually... Chloe Dygert was closing on her now. Annemiek has 2 minutes on Chloe Dygert and 2 minutes... Oh, my eyes are failing me. Is that 2.5 minutes? Is this? I can't say. And I shouldn't ask you. You have no idea. You had to ask me how many kilometres there were to go. But, it's just a bit of a kind of baffling... Not baffling, because we know how strong Annemiek van Vleuten is, but it hasn't played out in the way that we thought it was going to play out, has it?
No, and I mean, we should reflect on what looks likely to be a successful 100-kilometre solo attack. And, you know, you don't see that very often. The most famous is probably Eddy Merckx in 1969, at Stage of the Tour de France, 140 kilometres on his own. This is in that kind of league, and I think it probably owes as much to the fact that she was in such a strong Dutch team that the race within the Dutch team was to get on the front foot. And if a rider like Van Vleuten or Van der Breggen or Voss or, you know, Amy Peters or, you know, any of them find themselves in a potentially race-winning position at any time, they have the huge benefit of not having such an organised chase behind, because the other riders are reluctant to bring up these strong Dutch riders. So it's almost as if that has been the biggest factor in her tactics. It's about getting on the front foot.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen this exact same race, but with everyone in their trade teams, to see how it would have played out. Would it have played out differently? I think it kind of caught everyone a bit. I mean, I think it, like someone like Kashanivia Doma, just being dropped on that second climb of the day and Annemiek going away, just proves how strong Van Vleuten is, but also that perhaps the team tactics are so important. Kasia is in the Polish team, and it's a very small team, and it's not so organised. It's race on such a high level as Kasia does, and it just shows you how important those team tactics have been today.
You almost look like a member of the Dutch team yourself there, Rose, with your orange jacket on.
I hadn't thought about that. I don't know, it's somewhere between orange and red, isn't it? I guess it is orange, is it?
Yes, I'm colourblind as well as actually blind, so...
Oh, right. So
it looked kind of orange to me.
It's actually purple, didn't you realise? No. Well, I suppose I'll take that. I'll take that and I'll be, you know, celebrating tonight then, I guess.
Well, hopefully it'll make it a bit easier for you to get into with Annemiek van Vleuten at the finish.
Oh, I never have a problem with that, Richard. Come on.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
This episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina is supported by The Economist, which is, Rose, of course, about far more than just economics and finance. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, arts, the environment, and also sport. It helps readers prepare for what is going on in the world around them, sifting through the noise, focusing on the essential information that tells the real story in a time when facts matter more than ever. It has been a trusted source of intelligence for over 170 years, and it's for the kind of person who never stops asking questions and wants to know why the world is the way it is. You can get a free print copy of The Economist by texting the word BIKES, B-I-K-E-S, to 78070. But Orla, sorry, Rose, you've been reading your Economist. What did you find?
I found a very interesting, I don't know whether you read it as well, Rich, called Rejuvenation Juice was an article. And after misremembering my name just now, I think maybe you need to reverse the aging process yourself, perhaps.
Yeah, this is all about blood transfusions, which it's a bit of a thorny topic in the podcast about cycling. We don't recommend you try this, certainly not at home or anywhere else for that matter. It's banned, of course, in sports cycling, but inevitably it's popular in Silicon Valley and certain parts of the West Coast of America, where it is being used apparently to reverse even the aging process. An article that we're not going to talk about that did catch my eye, Rose, was about sand making noise, but the headline of the article really tickled me. Name that June.
Ba-bum-tsh.
Anyway, this article all about blood transfusions, it's been around for a while, this idea, and it was discredited, but new science has been found to suggest that it actually can work. There have been experiments conducted on mice. It's called parabiosis, which is not a word I'd heard before, but in mice, the results of the transfusions mean less inflammation in their brains, more neural stem cells in the brain area, which would allow them to remember the name of the person sitting opposite them, responsible for memory and learning, and better cognitive capacity. Their livers had less scarring and fat, that caught my eye too, and their muscles healed better and faster. In short, their bodies and brains looked a lot like the old mice after parabiosis. So, you know, this could be the future. Blood transfusions for everybody apart from athletes.
Well, it does sound a bit like one of those kind of old excuses from the 1990s, doesn't it? Of, you know, well, why has some cyclists been caught with bags of blood around their head? I'm just doing a bit of para... What was it?
Parabiosis.
Bit of parabiosis.
Just trying to look younger.
That's all it is. I'm just trying to, you know, get rid of the liver scarring. But it does sound like something like that. But maybe it's the future.
Well, I don't think UCI or WADA would buy that, or anybody else for that matter. If you would like to read articles like that and more, then get a free print copy of The Economist. The Economist is a smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you've never stopped asking questions, get your free copy now. Just text the word BIKES, B-I-K-E-S, to 78070. That's the word BIKES to 78070. How does the offer of free beer sound to you?
It sounds like I need to drop everything and take up this offer.
Well, Rose, all you need to do is go to beer52.com/cycle. And for just £4.95, you can get a case of 8 beers. And if you sign up within the next 2 weeks, which you will because you're going to drop everything and do this, you'll get an extra 2 beers. So that's a total of 10 free beers. Each month, Beer 52 deliver a case with a different theme. These have ranged from Germany to Korea, Norway to South Africa, California to Finland. And because they're a British company, they often have beers from the UK craft beer scene. Your first box will be sent to you next day and will contain beer from all over Europe. Beer 52 don't hold you to ransom. You can leave at any time. And you also get a snack and a copy of Ferment magazine if you sign up. You get that with your case. This month's theme is the Rugby Nations, Rugby World Cup, of course, on just now. Cycling World Championships, not the only major sporting event. The Rugby World Cup's happening in Japan at the moment. I know that, but I'm just careful because our host Orla Shinui, it's just, well, she's not joining us this month, Rose, because she probably doesn't have a lot of positive things to say about the Rugby World Cup at the moment. But we can say a lot of positive things about Beer 52's selection of rugby beers.
Oh yes, one of them that has taken my fancy is this one that's called Spread of Democracy, which is made by the how's your Estonian? Is Estonia playing rugby in the World Cup? I'm taking that, but only from Beer 52 sending me a delicious beer in honour of from Estonia, so that's how I know Estonia play rugby. I didn't know that. But that one really, that takes my fancy. And another great name, Freedom of Movement, which is a Belfast beer. Sounds excellent. These are all, these
that's
dark
a black
beers.
Lager, isn't it?
Yeah, these are all dark beers, but you know, that's, I feel like that's more in keeping. And that I mean, as in honouring Orla Shenoui, we've gone for some kind of stouty dark beers.
Well, they hunt all over the world for the best and most interesting beers from the greatest small batch breweries. And so you find a lot of interesting, unusual beers in your Beer 52 collections. So if you'd like to sign up for a free case of beer, just £4.95 for the postage, go to beer52.com/cycle. That's beer52.com/cycle. That's beer with the numbers 52.com/cycle. And don't forget to sign up in the next 2 weeks to get an extra 2 unmissable beers for free.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast Feminin, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Rose, we're back at the hotel. We've been up doing our interviews. You're drinking a cup of tea. That's very much the theme of the week.
It is, but I didn't get the call up to Betty's. So, gonna, for some reason, the cycling podcast doesn't stretch to the Feminin side of things, getting Betty's afternoon tea. But
controversial, Rose, and incorrect, inaccurate. Betty's is very, very busy at the moment, even for the cycling podcast. Oh. Anyway, well, we spoke to quite a lot of riders at the finish, and I mean, one very convincing winner, but lots of stories, really, I suppose. I spoke to Annemiek van Vleuten, whose interview you will have heard in the cycling podcast a few nights ago, and, you know, it seems that it certainly wasn't a plan for her to go out on her own with so far to go, but it definitely was a plan of the Dutch team to make the race very, very hard at that point and to really sort of break things up as early as that, and then I guess see what was left in the mix.
Yeah, it's impossible to guard against a team. That we knew it was going to be a Dutch winner, didn't we, really? As much as we were trying to come up with other possibilities, it couldn't have really come out of their grasp, because whatever the situation, they would have had someone that, you know, could have taken it up. And Van Vleuten wasn't expecting to be out there all that time. She knows she's a rider capable of actually riding out there on her own for that long. And then immediately when she gets that kind of 1 minute gap, which she did just in a moment almost, then it's kind of the rest of the peloton having to think, do we scramble to try and get silver and bronze already, even with 100k to go?
I was very curious to find out from Anna van der Breggen, who won the silver medal in the end and was a passenger in that group because her teammate was up the road, how she felt that how committed she felt that group was to chasing, because it was obviously hard to tell watching. And Van Vleuten said that she had been measuring her effort quite carefully and that she was, you know, conscious of the distance and that she'd still had more to go. So I spoke to Anna van der Breggen at the finish. She's always quite reserved, doesn't give, plays her cards pretty close to her chest, but, you know, one or two interesting snippets. And I think, you know, hard to tell whether she was happy with a silver medal and a team win or disappointed to have lost the world title that she won herself last year, of course. So let's hear from two of the Dutch riders, Anna van der Breggen, who was in that move, and Lucinda Brand. First Anna van der Breggen, then Lucinda Brand. Lofthouse is a very hard climb, but do you expect it to be as decisive as it proved to be in the end?
I no. We thought it would be a smaller group, not a bunch, but a smaller group. But in fact, it was. I mean, the chasing group was a smaller group.
And what did you think at that point? Did you think this is the race here? Did you think Annemiek could hold on for 100 kilometers on her own?
The race just started over there, so it depends of how the group is working together and how fast they are riding. And it stayed on 50 seconds for quite a long time. So then everything is still possible.
What were your impressions in that group? You were obviously not contributing to it, but did you feel that they were chasing as hard as they could?
Yeah, they were chasing hard, but I expected a bit more cooperation in the beginning. I mean, if you do it fast, then it's maybe, then it's taking less time. And the longer it took, the more girls were skipping turns and were getting tired. So, yeah, in the end, it was clear it was going to be difficult. This course, was really different. It was hard, especially because they were chasing the whole race. So, in fact, you go full speed the whole race, and which makes it, really hard.
How do you feel about your silver medal? You're obviously the reigning world champion. Your team has won, but how do you feel winning a silver medal today?
I think first and second is a great result. So, I'm happy with it.
Well, I mean, you can let us in on the Dutch plan now. Was that the tactic?
Yes, of course you never know who's joining. I mean, it's not easy to tell. There are so much strong riders, but it was a plan to go there hard and see on top what's the situation. So.
And was it a plan for Annemiek to go then?
Yeah, I mean, Annemiek and Anna are the two riders on a climb like that who are the strongest from our team. So, then it's, I think, the most logic way to let them do that.
I mean, it was a very aggressive race right from the start. We didn't see any breakaways go away or anything. It was really raced from the front, wasn't it? Was that just the Dutch team or was it other teams as well?
There was just a normal pace. We tried to make it a bit harder on the first climb. I think that worked pretty well. I think we're maybe 30, 35 riders only there, so everybody felt the legs already a little bit. We tried to see if then on top could go a group, but there was not really someone interested in it. I think everybody's really afraid for Lofthouse and really focused on that climb that should happen there. And you could see that with all the trains going into that road, Of course, it was a difficult road to there with the narrow parts and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, basically every team was waiting for that climb.
And what do you make of Annemiek riding on her own for 100 kilometers? I mean, did you think she was capable of that?
Even as she, everybody knows she's such a good time trialist. I mean, the names behind are such big riders. And she was only just getting away of them. Of course, I don't know how good they were working together or things like that. But, I mean, we also just stayed in the same gap of the second group. And speed was not that low. I mean, so, yeah, no, it's impressive.
Also in that little group that was chasing Van Vleuten all day was Soraya Paladin. And Italy was actually the only team in that very small break that had two riders in Paladin and Elisa Longo Borghini. This is what she had to say about the race.
Soraya, there was two Italians in that small breakaway. Did you manage to use it to your advantage, or why was it difficult to bring back Annemiek Van Vleuten?
Yeah, we tried to close the gap, but she was the strongest today and she won. We tried to do our best and in the end we are happy.
Did you feel the pressure as the only team with two riders in that small break?
No, we work all together, and in the end Elisa tried the attack and she can stay in the front, and then in Marta tried the sprint in the back. I think she was really good, and yeah, we are happy about our results, and that's it.
And was the race playing out as you expected it to, or did you think it would be a bit calmer, a bit quieter until the smaller laps?
No, we know that the Dutch girl want to do the climb really hard. We try to stay in the front, but Annemiek just drop us and say goodbye. See you in the finish. And yeah, we try to catch her, but it was impossible.
And what can you say about a performance like Annemiek Van Vleuten's today, doing a 100k solo break?
Yeah, just impressive.
I think somebody who deserves a lot of credit today was Lizzie Deignan. Clearly not at her very best, having returned to racing this year. But, you know, of all the riders in that group that was chasing, she looked like the one most determined to not let Van Vleuten just ride away with the gold medal. You know, she gave it a good go. And in doing so, you know, she slipped. I think she finished 31st in the end. So she was well down. But she was one of the most aggressive behind. She was the one, you know, trying to inject some pace into the chase. And I think she comes out of this race without a medal or a top 10 placing, but with a lot of credit.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, actually, because she was also riding against Anna van der Breggen. And we used to see before Lizzie took maternity leave that we used to see that it was Lizzie Deignan and Anna van der Breggen that were on the same team, both riding for Bols Dolmans, and they would be playing with like Kasia Nivedjoma, playing with everyone else, but making these little attacks. But every time Lizzie attacked, Anna van der Breggen was easily kind of on her wheel. It was clear to me that Lizzie Deignan wasn't holding, and other riders might have been holding something back, thinking maybe we get into the local circuits, we can bring that back. But I think Lizzie Deignan was almost seemed like the most aware rider out there, that as soon as you let Van Vleuten have a little bit of room, then you're not going to bring her back. So she was kind of going all out, and as you said, that's why she had nothing left in the end.
Well, let's hear briefly what she had to say at the finish.
Yeah, I mean, I gave it my all, chased the rainbow, didn't pull it off. Annemiek was head and shoulders above everybody and really deserved that title.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for their support of the cycling podcast. And you can get 25% off all your Science and Sport sports nutrition products at scienceandsport.com with the code
SISCP25. SISCP25. I'm singing that particularly proudly because Crystal Palace won today as well.
Yes.
SISCP25 for 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com. And thank you very much indeed to them for their support, makers of the world's finest sports nutrition products. A bit more reaction to the road race. We spoke to a lot of riders at the finish. Let's hear from podcast favourite Cecilia Tripp-Ludwig. She was in that move that went clear and was chasing Annemiek van Vleuten, but she didn't seem to be on the best of days for her. So here's what she had to say at the finish. It seems that everybody knew that climb, even though it was so early on, was going to be really important. What, you know, describe what it was like going up there.
Yeah, it was like really, really tough. And yeah, my legs were screaming, and you know, it was just with I was really trying to hang on with the tip of my nails, you know. But yeah, in the end, I managed, and we were in that aid rider group, and I just didn't have good enough legs.
Because it looked like you were chasing hard and the gap was being pegged around a minute. You must have known at that point Van Vleuten was on a very good day.
I know, yeah. She was just crazy strong today. And she really deserved the win. You know, I didn't know, because at that point we were like, yeah, wow, this is really hot. But, you know, maybe we can catch her back. You know, we can get her back. But, yeah, like I said, she was just too strong today. She did more than 100K solo. That's pretty... well done, and it's just unique. I mean, she just rode crazy well today.
Did you enjoy the course and the crowds?
Oh my God, that was good. I mean, holy moly, there were lots of people out on the course. And you know, it gives you such a boost and so, you know, extra energy when you just can't hear yourself think, you know, because there's you screaming. So yeah, I really enjoyed today, and yeah, I tried my best, and yeah, the legs were just not good enough.
Cecilia Tripp-Ludwig, relatively downbeat for her. She didn't have the best of days on a course that might have suited her. But it was a race where if you weren't clearly on fire, you were going to struggle, because another rider who was a sort of, you know, fancied rider for this race was Kasia Nevyedova, who I spoke to as well, and we heard from her in the podcast a couple of nights ago. And she was sort of mystified by the fact that she'd been found herself on a bad day, because she thought that she was in good form. And it seems to have caught a few people out, the course, and not just the course, but the way it was ridden in the early part of the race. Let's get some more reaction. I mean, one of the riders of the day was Chloe Dygert, you know, won the time trial in very convincing fashion ahead of Van der Breggen and Van Vleuten, and was a danger today, having never ridden a road race in Europe before. So she was in that group, which some people were surprised to see, because she's not known as a climber. But once she was there, she was a danger.
Yeah, I mean, she had an incredibly impressive ride, and she was probably one of the stars of the day, and kind of came away with, not, you know, looked like she was on for a silver and then would certainly make the podium, and then kind of came away with nothing in the end. Well, you know, incredible performance, but we remember from the time trial, she had given it everything and come back with a gold medal, but she couldn't even stand up off of her bike after that time trial. And I think it was similar today, that when I saw her going back to the buses, she was being helped along by two of her coaches. She had arms around both of them. She was kind of limping. She could hardly stand up straight. So obviously, seeing all this situation, I thought I'd get a quick word with her, which doesn't sound very kind. But yeah, I got a very quick word with her, and a quick word with Leah Thomas, the Bigler rider who used to race alongside Chloe Dygert a couple of years ago in the 2016 team, which is Christian Armstrong's team.
Chloe, you gave everything yet again and put on an incredible show for the people here at the World Championships. How does it feel to have given it all and not been able to come away with it this time?
It's always a bummer not being able to be on that top step. But yeah, I mean, there's really no excuse. It's just, this is my first time racing in Europe, first time racing really against these girls at this level. You know, everybody at their fittest, so, you know, really didn't really know what to expect. But yeah, I mean, there's no excuse. So it was just a good day for them, and just a learning experience for me, and can't wait for next time.
And do you think you've proven the strength of American racing? A lot of the time the Europeans think that, you know, it's all happening on the European scene, but to come over here and, you know, beat them at their own game, how satisfying is that?
Yeah, you know, it's exciting. It's yeah, I guess, but you know, I just want to race my bike, and so yeah.
Well, Leah, what was that like for you out on the road?
It was hard. The course is pretty unrelenting, but I think we had a really good race as a team today, and it's always an honor to represent your country and take part in such an iconic race, and so I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Now, you always say it's hard, but you actually love hard racing, let's be honest.
I do like hard racing, but it doesn't make it not hard, and it doesn't make it not painful in the moment. So if you ask me in an hour, I might be a little more over the pain.
And tell us a bit about Chloe Diger, because you used to race with her a few years ago on the same team.
Yeah.
What is she like as a person and as a talent?
She's super talented. She has an incredible ability to dig deeper than just about pretty much anybody on the whole entire planet, I think. And it's just been pretty amazing to watch her develop as an athlete. And, you know, this was her first European race in Europe, and to be able to get in that break and then really push yourself and finish fourth is pretty outstanding. And then Corinne also, to be able to finish in the top 10 is pretty cool.
And do you think she's had any, taken any slight advantage from the opponents not necessarily knowing how she races, because most of the people here are Europeans and in the European racing scene? Is that, she's been able to use that to her advantage?
I guess you could look at it that way, but you could also look at it, she also doesn't know the European peloton either. So I think she just races with her heart and races with her gut, and so far it hasn't led her astray, so hopefully she keeps doing that.
And do you think she's kind of showed everyone a bit of a lesson? A lot of the time, some of the Europeans think the American racing is kind of shorter, it's all criterium racing, it's kind of nothing to worry about. Do you think she's proved a bit of a point here?
Definitely. I think anybody who's able to come to the World Championships as your first European race and be that successful says something about you as a bike racer. So hats off to Chloe, and I think overall it was a pretty productive day and a successful day for the U.S.
That was Chloe Diger and Leah Thomas. But, you know, the performance we're going to be talking about for years is Annemiek van Vleuten's solo ride, 104 kilometres. I mentioned earlier on Eddie Merckx in 1969. Chris Froome at the Giro d'Italia a couple of years ago, 80 kilometres. And you remember the way that people reacted. That's nothing. The way that people reacted to that. You know, we have seen Philippe Gilbert in the Tour of Flanders, Peter Sagan in Paris-Roubaix, Anna van der Breggen also in the World Championship last year, Anna van der Breggen at the Tour of Flanders. But we haven't seen we haven't seen a 100 kilometer solo break. We haven't seen it often in women's races either, that length of attack. It was extraordinary, and it's going to be talked about for a long, long time. And it's funny because I found last year's World Championship road race when Anna van der Breggen went clear with, was it 45 kilometers to go? I think something like that. That race was killed at that point, and it wasn't. There was really no intrigue or excitement left. Whereas today, I didn't feel that Van Vleuten's attack did kill it, because it seemed ridiculous to imagine that she could hold on for all that time out front on her own. There was this sort of mystery around it, whether it was possible even. There was also this very strong chasing group behind that were pegging her at a minute for quite a long time. So eventually, it became inevitable that she was going to win. But I felt that it didn't have the same sort of deadening effect on the race as Van der Breggen's attack had last year, weirdly.
I think also because it seemed that Van Vleuten was putting so much into getaway very early on, like with 100k to go, that you would have thought that how could she possibly keep a hold of that gap? And then obviously Chloe Diger came out and then seemed to be quickly making time up on her. But obviously that meant that Chloe Diger cracked and, you know, went backwards practically, but it was phenomenal, and it's amazing to see a rider kind of at her peak putting out an extraordinary performance like that, and also becoming world champion, which is something that she in the road race, which she has never done before. So that's kind of one of those last little bits of her palmares that she's picking up. And she made it a very hard race for everyone, though, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking up. So last year, Anna van der Breggen, it was 39 kilometres. And headline in The Guardian was, Anna van der Breggen wins road world championships with astonishing ride. You know, and that was astonishing. It did seem astonishing, but 104 is just, it's in another stratosphere. And it's funny because, you know, Van Vleuten obviously very happy. This makes up for a lot of disappointments when she crashed last year in Innsbruck, when she crashed in Rio at the Olympic road race. But when she appeared in the mix zone in her pristine rainbow jersey, you know, that it is a striking garment. It does have a certain magic about it, in the same way or even more so than the yellow jersey at the Tour de France or the pink jersey at the Giro, because you get to wear it for a year, of course, and there's a sort of magic about it. And she felt, I think, you know, on top of the world, and this is the crowning glory for her. Although I guess the Olympic Games in Tokyo next year will also be a huge, huge target for her.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the only bit of unfinished business, doesn't it now? And she was so disappointed at the time trial to have, and I remember listening to her on the podcast saying, it's very rare that I set myself a goal like this. I'm so focused in on this goal and I miss it. And I'd be intrigued to know whether that actually kind of fired her up a little bit more to when she probably wasn't necessarily thinking that she was going to be the rider to go for the win for the Dutch team at this race, where that kind of fired her up to think, actually, you know what, that I'm going to take this one because I missed out on the one that I was right, should have been rightfully mine. I missed out on it. So I think that would have put more fire in her belly.
Well, we asked a few of the other riders for their reactions to her win. Let's hear what a few of them had to say. Alice Barnes of Great Britain, Tiffany Cromwell of Australia, and Audrey Cordon-Rigaud of France.
I don't really know much about it. We didn't have radio, so all you really find out is what's coming from the boards on the motorbikes. But, yeah, it sounds pretty impressive.
So one word to describe Van Vleuten's ride.
Impressive. No one knew what was going to happen on Lofthouse. Like, everyone had their ideas. We knew it was going to be critical. We just didn't know if it was going to come back after. That was the bigger question. We knew it was going to have an impact. We knew there was going to be the potential for moves to go, but it was depending on the directions of the wind. And it was such a good tailwind, which favoured a breakaway. So, you know, it wasn't that they weren't chasing behind. Just obviously Van Vleuten, we know, is, you know, a freak of nature half the time, or 98% of the time. And then the group behind were obviously a bunch of very, very classy riders and strong riders. So for the most part, all the big teams were represented. So then they didn't need chase. And then the teams that weren't represented weren't strong enough.
Yeah, I think she was so, so mad after the HTT. You could see on the podium she was so disappointed. And I can imagine when you get two time trial titles and then you come here and you're just third, then it's disappointing. So she wanted to prove again that she was the boss, and she is the boss for sure. And yeah, I think it's just an amazing ride, and she deserves the title for sure.
Just before we go, and before we hear from Orla in a moment, a bit of team news and also a couple of rumours. In news first, as Orla mentioned in last month's podcast, Bols Dolmans, who for so long have been the strongest team in women's cycling, is looking for new sponsors for next year. Both Bols and Dolmans are pulling out, leaving Anna van der Breggen and all the other stars of that team without backing for 2020, as Danny Stam, their sports director, told the press during the World Championships in Yorkshire. But Stam said he is determined to continue with the team and even to expand it, aiming to increase his roster from 12 to 18 riders in 2021, and also to run a double programme that year. Meanwhile, Service Canavan, the former Paris-Roubaix winner and now sports director at Team Ineos, is setting up a new under-23 women's development team. We heard from Canavan, who is the father of four girls, on the podcast last year about his daughter's racing exploits and his ambition of setting up a team as his oldest daughter moved into senior ranks, and that has now happened, or will happen next year. In other team news, there are strong rumours circulating in the women's peloton that men's teams EF Education First and Team Ineos might launch women's teams. It isn't clear when this could happen, but both teams are understood to be looking seriously at proposals to launch women's teams. When I asked Team Ineos about this, a spokesman said that there are no plans for a women's team in 2020, which leaves open the possibility of a team perhaps launching in 2021. In the case of EF, we understand that additional sponsorship would be necessary before anything could happen. Now, just before we go this month, let's hear from Orla, who's currently in Doha at the World Athletics Championships, but was obviously watching events in Yorkshire with great interest. Her dispatch from the desert comes with a public health warning. It contains singing.
Hello! Congratulations to both of you for surviving the, quite frankly, brutal conditions in Yorkshire. My life, the cycling gods put on a tough World Championships, didn't they? And congratulations to anyone listening who went along to lend their support. full credit to you. That cannot have been easy. In hindsight, of course, if the cycling gods were putting on the toughest world championships imaginable, then really we should have put money on Annemiek van Vleuten. It was considered to be not a tough enough course for her, so the weather played its part and made it tougher all the same. I would say maybe Chloe Dygert-Owen's phenomenal performance in the individual time trial earlier in the week maybe laid the foundation somewhat for Van Vleuten, because she is a rider who likes to prove a point. Maybe the fact that she finished third and lost the rainbow bands there made her all the hungrier. Possibly not. But on that note, I did think, I mean, when she went on the attack anyway, but certainly when she won and in the manner that she did win, I just, my mind went back once again, as it often does with her, to what I've talked about before in the podcast. And that's when I interviewed Annemiek shortly after she came out of hospital in Rio, when she had suffered that horrific fall on the run down off Vista Chinesa into Copacabana. And many feared the worst in that fall. The fact that she was up and out of her hospital bed so quickly was remarkable. And I've often reflected on the fact that rather than her seemingly feeling grateful to be alive, which I'm sure she was to an extent, but she was more frustrated that she didn't have the opportunity to contest the goal that she thought was within her grasp. But also, I think she was kind of struck by the fact that it was within her grasp. And I think that so much of her career, I think it's hard to argue otherwise, so much of her career since then has been built from that moment, from a realization as to what she could possibly achieve, and a desire and need to prove herself and to not be defined by that fall, which of course she's not, except I'm the one who keeps bringing it up just because I keep remembering it. But in my defense, I was looking at Van Vleuten's social media earlier, and she retweeted an article by Marion de Vries in the Dutch website trou.nl, trou.nl, if anybody wants to have a look at it, where she makes the same point, really. The article starts with the question, can a horrible fall be a blessing? Can lying lifelessly in the gutter prove to be the best thing that ever happened to you? I mean, that sets the tone for the column. And of course, the answer being, or the suggestion being, that yes, it can be the best thing that ever happens to you. And the fact that Van Vleuten herself retweeted this makes me think that maybe that is where all of this stems from to a certain extent. But what a phenomenal world champion we now have. And I just feel that we are blessed as cycling fans to have witnessed, even from afar like I did via social media, the world championships that we have all the way through. And it's been inspiring, I think, coming at the end of this season, which has given us some wonderful moments, to look at that and think ahead to next season. It's really exciting. And to think that we've got Annemiek van Vleuten as a world champion in the Rainbow Bands next year, I mean, it's quite a formidable thought, really, what she's going to be able to do in that, given everything that she's done this year so far. So yeah, a phenomenal world championships. And I want to leave you with a thought that that is shamelessly nicked from Marion de Vries, because in the start of her article, she made a wonderful point, which resonates very well with me. She asked, can it be a coincidence that you can sing the words Annemiek van Vleuten to the tune of What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Stronger by Kelly Clarkson? Have a little think about that. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, or something. I'm not quite, that's a rubbish tune, but anyway. Annemiek van Vleuten. I mean, she thought about that, so full credit. Yeah, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Indeed, absolutely should be a theme tune now for Annemiek van Vleuten. I hope you've both dried out and recovered from what was a fantastic World Championships. And I'll see you all soon.
Well, Rose, I think that's about it from Harrogate for the World Championships. Hope you've enjoyed your visit here, enjoyed the race, enjoyed the town.
I've enjoyed the tea. I've enjoyed the sunshine. A bit of rare sunshine this week. And it's been a very quick visit, but it's been an amazing one. And to witness a phenomenal race like that is, you know, couldn't ask for more.
And to get that.
Actually, I could ask for more. I could ask for a trip to Betty's for an afternoon tea. That is what I can ask.
But very close to Betty's, you did get that that hello from Julian Alaphilippe before the race started.
Yeah, but you're making this seem like the most amazing thing ever. But you have to remember that, you know, I have to just you know, he's old news to me. I have to hang out with him all the time.
It was the most amazing thing ever. Anyway, that's all for this month's episode. We'll be back next month with Orla Shenouy if we decide to have her back.
If we can find her. Where on the planet is Orla Shenouy?
Doha.
Yeah, I could see it. She's also on the TV, but we'll find her. We'll bring her back from the deserts of Doha.
Well, we hope so. In the meantime, thank you very much, Rose.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.